Okay, there is a bit of a change of title, which reflects a recent paper that appeared by Nikita Nekrasov and myself. So basically followed out the line of thought in that paper. And in the process, I will also present... is there a pointer? Or oh, yeah, here. Okay, so I'll talk about type zero strings, but this will be a kind of motivational part, a wish list for what we would like to do eventually. But then we will drop back to n equal 1 and n equal 2 supersymmetric models, where what we want to do can be done more readily, and I think there are some rather precise calculations that one can do. Now, the code word for this talk are fractional brains. Probably many of you have not heard what a fractional brain is, so I will start by explaining that. Then I will talk about fractional brains and gravity duals and type zero string theory. Then we'll move on to n equal 1 supersymmetric models, which are related to placing brains at Kani-Fold singularity and derive their dual supergravity description. In particular, we will be looking at SUN plus M cross SUN models, and the fractional brains are necessary to create this M. So if you don't have fractional brains, then M will be zero, and this M is just the number of fractional brains that you have. So from the field theory point of view, fractional brains are not mysterious at all. They just shift the ranks, the relative rank of the gauge group, and therefore render the theory non-conformal, which is what we really want to study. And then we will move on to doing a similar thing in more supersymmetric models, n equal 2, where the stuff becomes even easier, and I think a somewhat different and perhaps more elegant approach is possible. Okay, so let me just start by introducing what fractional brains are. The simplest setting where they occur are type 2 strings on some orbifolded spaces. And essentially what you have is there are regular brains which can be positioned away from the orbifold fixed plane. So the way it's constructed is that you have some orbifold, you put a brain parallel to it, and then there is an image D brain on the other side. Then when you take the limit, when both of them go on the singularity, you get a regular brain. But then there are also fractional brains which are stuck at the singularity and just cannot leave it. So they cannot be derived by this limiting procedure. And as a result, so basically if you start by placing the brain at the singularity and then divide the space, you basically get some fraction of the original D-brain charge. So one way to think about them is as these special brains pinned to the fixed plane. And there is another way, another closely related way, which is to think about them as wrapped D5 brains. And this was suggested in these two papers. For example, if we consider type 2B strings on R4 mod gamma orbifold, where gamma is a discrete subgroup of SU2, which ensures that this theory has n equal to supersymmetry, then it turns out that when you blow up the space R4 mod gamma, it actually has two cycles. Then when you wrap D5 brains over these two cycles, you get what looks like a three brain but pinned to the singular fixed plane. Okay, so that's another way which will be very important for us to think of these fractional brains as D5 brains wrapped over either collapsed or blown up two cycles. So now it's well known, and this was worked out by Katru Silverstein and Lawrence Nekrasov and Vafa, that when you study regular D3 brains placed at the fixed plane in theories of this sort, you get superconformal field theories on these brains of the type SUN cross SUN times N1, and then you have up to SUN times NR, where basically NR are just dimensions of the irreducible representations of this discrete group gamma. And then the dual gravity picture of such regular D3 brain models is very simple. One just takes type 2B theory and studies it on space ADS 5 crosses 5 mod gamma. Okay, in other words, this duality is just an orbifold of the mother duality, which is the duality between n equal 4 super young Mills and ADS 5 crosses 5. Okay, so. But now in these models, there are also, if one thinks geometrically about the space S5 mod gamma, there are actually R plus 1 different 2 cycles. And hence, by wrapping D5 brains around them, there are R plus 1 types of fractional brains. And what adding the ith fractional brain does is it takes this ith Grage group appearing in the product and augments the rank by plus or minus 1, depending on whether we put a fractional brain or fractional anti-brain. And this will immediately make field theory non-conformal because the delicate balance of the beta function will no longer hold. And this will actually make the theory non-conformal, but very mildly non-conformal, but because the correction to beta function will just be of order 1 over n when you're talking about the Hooft coupling. So what we will do is we will see what the effect of the separation is on the dual type 2B background. And the simplest, so if you're not an expert on this and you want the simplest example, it's just provided by the Z2 orbifold of the n equal 2 of the n equal 4 theory, where you simply reflect 4 of the coordinates. Okay? So when you do this reflection, it's clearly a Z2 operation, and also acts as a Z2 operation on the fermions. And we find in the low energy limit SUM cross SUM gauge theory with high, bifundamental hypermultiplets in n and bar and n bar n representations. And it is simply dual to ADS 5 crosses 5 mod Z2, where this reflection just acts on the 4 of the 5 coordinates of the sphere. Okay? So it's very simple. And it's also clear that this reflection will, of course, leave the fixed circle. Okay, so what, so because it reflects only 4 of the coordinates, and the sphere can be represented as sum of 6 coordinates squared equal to 1, it will leave a fixed circle. And the existence of this fixed circle will be very important for us. So now this theory is sometimes summarized by this quiver diagram, where you, these lines represent by fundamental chiral fields. So it looks like this Z2 orbifold theory. Now, adding M fractional brains will instead produce a non-conformal theory with gauge group SUN plus M cross SUN and exactly the same matter content. In other words, it will still be this bifundamental matter content, and it will no longer be conformal. So that's the simplest example, and that's the one I will discuss in most detail. Now, what was found over a year ago by Witten and myself is that if you take this model, so this S5 mod Z2 is a singular space, right? But this singularity can be smoothed out in a very natural way from the point of view of the field theory. And it actually can be smoothed out into another Einstein space, which is called T11. It's a coset space of the form SU2 cross SU2 mod U1, which still preserves n equal 1 supersymmetry. And from the point of view of the field theory, this smoothing out procedure just corresponds to giving masses to the adjoints. Okay? So you will end up with a very similar SUN cross SUN superconformal theory, except now it has n equal 1 supersymmetry. It has exactly the same set of bifundamental fields, but no adjoints. Okay? And the amazing thing is that this is precisely the theory that you get when you put n regular D3 brains at the conifold singularity, which is the simplest singular Calabi-Yau manifold. So this is something I will review in detail. And then you find that adding M fractional D3 brains will again change change it to SUN plus M cross SUN. And actually, the procedure for how you add these three brains was outlined in a paper which is over a year old by Steve Gubser and myself, where we considered precisely D5 brains wrapped over a large non-singular two-cycle of T11. And this will be very important for us in constructing the supergravity duals. Okay, so now this is the rough outline of the talk. So let me just talk a little bit about type zero strings, because I think they provide the kind of overall motivation. Now, in type zero strings, the supersymmetry is just completely broken, and it's broken by the type of GSO projection one does. So it's still an NSR string, but the GSO projection is non-chiral. So you don't separately fix minus 1 to the f left equal to 1, but you just fix minus 1 to the f left plus f right equal to 1. And then you actually have no space-time fermions at all in this model, but you have, roughly speaking, twice the number of bosonic sectors. And this was shown to be modular invariant by Dixon and Harvey and by Seiberg and Witten. So these pluses or minuses mean the eigenvalue of minus 1 to the f left or minus 1 to the f right. So comparing it to their type 2 cousins, you see that these sectors are new, the minus-minus sectors, while the plus-plus sector here is what was present before. So you get twice the number of Ramon-Ramon fields, and you also have the seemingly fatal feature that this sector contains a tachyonic field. So if we look at type, so one can naturally combine the fields from these two sectors into plus and minus fields by simply forming their plus or minus linear combination. And then intuitively, because there are twice as many types of D brains, there are twice as many, twice as many types of Ramon-Ramon fields, you expect twice as many D brain charges. And indeed, you can construct explicitly the states for say, DP plus brains, which couple to the field C plus, and DP minus brain that couples to the field C minus. So now, if you look at the type 0B theory, even though it has four form fields, it's no longer chiral, unlike 2B, because there are twice as many of them. And so the corresponding field strength F5 is such that the D3 plus brains couple to electric components of F5, and D3 minus couple to magnetic components. And actually, we will see that these electric and magnetic component, magnetic D3 brains, are just exactly the fractional brains for the case of this theory. Now, why is that? Because actually, type 0 strings can be viewed as orbifolds of type 2 strings. And the orbifolding is simply done by reversing the sign of all the space-time fermion fields. So it's a minus 1 to the FS orbifold. And in this sense, this doubling of brains is precisely the statement about fractional brains. So in particular, these two different types of fractional brains are distinguished by the sign, not just by how they couple to the F, to these Ramon-Ramon fields, but also by the sign of the tachyon tetpole. So they have equal and opposite signs for this tachyon tetpole. And then one can actually build a regular DP brain by just putting the two of them on top of each other. That does not couple to the twisted sector fields, and in particular, it does not couple to the tachyon, which is one of the twisted sectors from the point of view of the orbifolding. So if you look at this regular orbifold theory, one has equal numbers of plus and minus brains, and each one will have its own UN gauge group, okay, which rotates them. So you'll have UN cross UN gauge theory with bifundamental fermions, actually, because the string stretched between plus and minus brains turn out to be fermionic. So for three brains, we find in the infrared limit a non-supersymmetric theory, which is nevertheless conformal in the planar limit, and it has the spectrum which can be calculated this way. So when you reduce it to 3 plus 1 dimensions, you get 6 adjoint scalars for each gauge group and 2 sets of bifundamental wild fermions. But now, so this is in some sense just the regular representation from the point of view of the Warby fold. But now, so there are various arguments why this theory is conformal in the planar limit. One of them is when you look at gravity duals, you conclude that the gravity dual is just ADS5 cross S5, but just considered in the type 0 setting and not in the type 2 setting. And then it's also, as emphasized by Nekrasov and Shatashvili, this Warby fold is actually one of the examples of the most general Warby folds by discrete subgroups of SU4. In fact, it's perhaps the simplest one you can imagine, because this is just the Warby folding by minus 1 of SU4, which switches the sign of all fermion fields. So all of this is basically under control, and one can do some fun things with it. But one cannot really study the issues that are realistic, quote unquote. In other words, this theory has no beta function in the planar limit. So now a more ambitious attempt, which is actually what Seitlin and I originally did, was instead of considering this regular Warby fold, we considered an irregular Warby fold by stacking just n electric D3 brains, which is in some sense the simplest setting for fractional brains without supersymmetry. Then the field theory just turns out to be SUN coupled to six adjoint scalars, and one can use this brain picture to conclude that the dual background carries electric F5 flux, just because that's the sort of tadpole this stack of brains has. And then it also has a source for the tachyon. In other words, we saw that these brains have uncancelled tachyon tadpole. So in the dual gravity background, it means that the tachyon will somehow vary across the as a function of radius. And T field, the tachyon field, cannot be kept non-vanishing, unlike in the other case. So this should create an RG flow for the dilaton. And in fact, one of the equations that you get from the dual type 2B action will indeed contain the flow for the dilaton. So if T is non-zero, the dilaton will change according to this. And with some assumptions, it's possible to see that actually this causes a logarithmic variation of the coupling constant. But there are some assumptions, and of course, without the help of supersymmetry, this subject is somewhat murky. Although one can make plausible assumptions, it's hard to make it into exact science. But this is a kind of wish list to understand these type of theories. It would be even nicer. So one of the unpleasant features of this theory is the six adjoint scalars. And you want to get rid of them and really study pure blue theory and hopefully construct the gravity dual for it. So in fact, one can engineer such a theory also using fractional brains. And getting rid of scalars is actually very easy, because all that you need to do is basically Warby fold this type 0B model by an additional reflection operation which just reflects the six coordinates. And these are precisely the coordinates that correspond to these scalar fields. So this was discussed in a recent paper by Nekrasov, Shadashvili, and me. And so again, you can look at either regular or irregular representations. So placing n regular D3 brains, we just find an SUN to the 4 theory, because you started with SUN cross SUN and did an additional Z2 Warby fold. So you get the theory with the following type of quiver diagram. There are 4 gauge groups. There are fermions living on these sides of the square and the scalars living on the diagonal, but there are no longer any adjoints at all. You've basically thrown away the adjoints. And what this means is that if you just stack, so there are 4 types of fractional brains corresponding to the vertices to each gauge group, right? Each gauge group has its own fractional brain. So if we just take, say, n fractional brains of this type, we are going to get pure glue SUN theory. And boy, wouldn't it be nice to construct its dual. We don't know how to do this yet, but we hope that these considerations will be useful and there might be some analogous picture to what we saw just for the stack of electric brains. So now, such a theory, which is pure glue, of course, has a beta function of order 1 for the Toft coupling, and of course, finding its gravity dual is a kind of the end goal, in some sense, of this whole project of gauge theory gravity duality. But now, let us do something which I think makes a small step towards this goal, but it's a very definite step. So first of all, to simplify matters, we will study theories where the beta function is of order 1 over n. This will help us in actually finding well-defined duals. And second, we will add supersymmetry to remove the uncertainties in the effective action which were present in the type 0 theory. Okay. So now, so the n equal 1 model that we can study is the three brains on the Konefeld model that I already mentioned before. So basically the space T11, I already said, it's actually, if you view the Konefeld as a cone, then the space T11 is simply the base of this cone. And then the usual logic, ADS-CFT logic, takes you from a stack of a large number of D3 brains at the tip of the cone to the theory on the type 2B theory on the space ADS-5 cross the base of the cone. So let me show this in a little more detail. Okay. So what is the Konefeld? It's just specified by an equation and four complex coordinates. You set the sum of their squares equal to 0. And the metric on this space can be written in the cone form. There is an overall radial coordinate corresponding to the scaling of all z's. And you write it as dr squared plus r squared times some angular metric. This angular metric lives on the space T11. Everything is totally explicit here. The coordinates are known, the metric is known, the topology is known. So it's the kind of Calabi-Yau space which is easy to work with. And in particular, the space T11 can be represented as a U1 bundle over a product of two S2s, a product of two two-spheres. So these thetas and phis are the two-sphere coordinates, and then there is the extra U1, and you see that it's bundled in the standard way over the two two-spheres. Now, if you simply introduce regular three brains at r equal to 0, the metric will change according to the well-known rule that you insert this harmonic function here and here in front of the longitudinal and transverse parts of the metric, right, with opposite. So here you have it h to the plus 1/2 and here h to the minus 1/2. And then take the limit r going to 0. And in one line, you discover the ADS-5 cross T11 metric, okay, which is this. Okay, now I don't have time to review the arguments about the how you construct the dual theory, but you basically make a cosine decomposition of these coordinates labeling the Konefeld. Turns out to be nicer to decompose them in terms of a set of two A's and two B's such that this equation is automatically solved by the ansatz. So you sort of solve this constraint automatically by the ansatz, and then you immediately see that the theory with a single three brain is U1 cross U1 gauge theory with A1, A2, and B1, B2 fields. And the non-abelian generalization is quite interesting because it's essentially this, but you also have to introduce a quartic superpotential. Now, you can ask, how can a quartic superpotential be marginal? Because usually cubic ones are marginal. But in this theory, when you have flown to the fixed point, the R charges of these A's and B's are precisely such as to make this a marginal superpotential. So then you find that the R charge of each of these fields is 1/2, and correspondingly it has some exact dimension, 3/4, which is just fixed by the superconformal algebra. Okay, so this more or less describes this model. Now, as I said, it's interesting that this model can be viewed as the n equal 2 theory with mass terms added. So on one hand, you can just blow up as 5 mod z2 into t11, and there is no topological obstruction for doing that. And on the field theory side, you just start with n equal 2 model, which also has gauge group SUN cross SUN. It also has these fields A1, A2, B1, and B2, but it also has two extra adjoint fields, phi and phi tilde. And what you do, you simply add the equal and opposite masses to phi and phi tilde, integrate them out, and miraculously you get exactly the right superpotential, exactly the unique superpotential consistent with the symmetries of this problem. So in some sense, this is the simplest kind of RG flow. You start with n equal 2 model, you turn on a relevant operator, and you flow to this n equal 1 conifold model. So all of these considerations will be useful for us. Now, there are various. Now, this n equal 1 duality allows for kind of more interesting checks even than the n equal 4 duality. For example, under this RG flow, one can show just an. The field theory side that the central charge or the normalization of the TT correlator changes by a factor of 27 over 32 as you flow from the UV to the IR. And exactly the same result is reproduced on the ADS side by simply computing the ratio of the volumes of S5 mod Z2 and T11. This was shown by Steve Gubser. And then the part most relevant for us is that one can also introduce wrapped brains over cycles of T11 and study what they mean in the dual gauge theory. Now, topologically, T11 is just a product of a 2-sphere times a 3-sphere. So for one thing, you can wrap 3 brains over S3, and they turn out to be dual to the so-called Dibberian operators, where you multiply n of these A fields, for example, and anti-symmetrize in both groups. And the dimension of this operator is precisely reproduced by computing the mass of this wrapped 3 brain and feeding it into the ADS-CFT formula, and you get 3/4 n. So this is a kind of gravitational derivation of the anomalous dimension of this A being -1/4. Then you can look at D5 brain wrapped over a 2-cycle. And what Steve and I argued was that this is a domain wall between the place where the theory is dual to SUN cross SUN and the place where it's dual to SUN cross SUN plus 1. And we remarked that this suggests construction of duals for non-conformal theories of this sort. Yes? They basically, geometrically, there are two different 2-spheres. Okay? So the baryon, which is wrapped basically over 1 2-sphere plus psi, is the A baryon, and the D3 brain wrapped over the other 2-sphere plus psi is the B baryon. Okay, so now the argument for this extra plus 1 was actually a string creation argument similar to what Ami just reviewed for us, that if you have a D5 brain wrapped over this S2, and you bring the 3 brain wrapped over S3, they're actually totally orthogonal. And in these cases, it's been shown that a stretch string has to be created between them. And the stretch string is just an extra fundamental index. So this mismatch of indices by 1 means that the number of colors of one of the gauge group has shifted by 1. And on the other side of the domain wall, the corresponding object has 1 loose index. This is the string. Okay, so if we position this wrapped brain at some ADS coordinate R star, then far, say, to the right, at much bigger values of R, you find this theory. Now, how do we look for its gravity dual? Well, it's clear that this wrapped 5 brain will create flux that corresponds to it through ADS space. And what 5 brain couples to D5 brain, it couples magnetically to this 3-form Ramon-Ramon flux. So the integral of this 3-form through this 3-sphere, a dual to the 2-sphere over which we wrap it, has to be M. And this is how we build SUN plus M cross SUN theory. So the crucial new observation is that this generates the NS and S2 form precisely in such a way to explain the RG flow. And how does this work? Well, there are well-known type 2B supergravity equations which are responsible for this. So in presence of F5, if you turn on HRR, okay, it will act as a source for H and S and S, and the other way around. What we can do is, if the number of these fractional brains, so first of all, this RAP-D5 brain is precisely the fractional brain. If the number of such brains is fixed as we take the large N limit, then their back reaction on the original space turns out to be of order M over N squared. But the beta function from here will be of order M over N. So the leading effect will be just to turn on H and S and S. And this can be solved perfectly explicitly. We pick the basis of one forms on T11, then HRR has to be such that it spans the three sphere such that it's a closed form. Okay, so it's the non-trivial closed form, which satisfies the equation dH is equal to zero. And the noteworthy fact is that you have to take the difference of the volume form of the two spheres here. Okay, then this will actually act as a source for the NS and S2 form spanning the complementary two-sphere, which is dual. And the volume form of this complementary two-sphere is precisely this object here. Okay, so in other words, BNS and S will be some function of the radius times this two-form omega 2, which also satisfies d omega 2 is equal to 0. This creates H and S and S of the form DF wedge this two form. So in other words, when the indices of this RR form point through the three sphere, the indices of an S and S three form will point through the remaining two sphere and the radius. So there will be a radial component from this DF, and this is crucial. Okay, so now then it just remains to solve the equation, and you find that the solution of the equation is just that f of r is proportional to m times log r, and then h just goes as 1 over r, but this 1 over r, when you square it, is just compensated by the r squared in the metric. So h squared ns and s is of same order as h squared r. It's just a constant, basically. So this creates constant h squareds in ADS space. And now to relate this to field theory beta functions, we recall the rule for how the difference of couplings is related to this NS and S flux in this model. And this is somehow inherited from the Z2 orbifold from which we flowed, where it was shown by Lorentz, Nekrasov, and Vafa that the relation is that when this NS and S flux deviates from the orbifold value 1/2, these two couplings become unequal according to this rule. So basically, the radial variation of this NS and S flux through the two sphere is just the RG flow of the difference here. And this RG flow, as we showed, is precisely logarithmic. And now it can be checked that the same phenomenon holds on the field theory side, because when you create this imbalance in the rank, then the Schiffman-Weinstein beta function equations will look like this. And taking the difference of these equations, you do find M times log, okay? So this is what we get through almost no calculating at all. We didn't do it. We have to blame our laziness for it, but I don't think it's that hard, but we were content to see that this is clearly in effect linear in M over N. I'm willing to bet 10 cents that the coefficient will work. But perhaps I can upgrade the monetary value. Okay, so the point is that if you look at the difference of these inverse Hoft couplings, you find M over N times log lambda, and this is the leading effect. Now, as advertised, the other effects will be at least at most of order M over N squared. For example, the equation for the dilaton necessarily involves these H squareds, and these are of order M squared. so they are further suppressed. And this is really what allows us to build this kind of perturbation theory, that this back reaction on the metric and the dilaton is much, much smaller than the reaction on the difference of couplings, exactly as expected from field theory. Okay, and now, so how much time do I have? Okay. So now I move on to the orbifold model, which you can, as I explained, you can think of this orbifold model as where we descended from to get to the conifold model. So it's an even simpler model. And here one can be even more elegant in describing these fractional brains. So just to remind you how this orbifold works, before adding the three brains, you had the space, just the sixth plane, the six-dimensional space times R4 mod gamma, right? So there is a fixed sixth plane at the origin. And gamma, in general, has to be one of the AD subgroups of SU2. I will discuss the Z2 model in most explicitness and just mention how it generalizes. So after you've added these n regular D3 brains, you basically create space ADS5 cross S5 mod Z2, whose metric can be written very explicitly. Okay, it's just in this way of writing the five-sphere metric, you have an S3 mod Z2 part and the other part, and the fixed circle sits at the place where this S3 mod Z2 shrinks to zero. That sits at theta equal to zero. And then, and it's precisely there that these twisted sector fields live. So you can think about it like this. Before adding three brains, the twisted sector fields lived on R5, 1. After adding the three brains, the space has changed to ADS5 cross S1. Okay, so these three brains kind of modified the geometry of the space. And so what we have to do to understand the fractional brains is to understand how fields turn on this subspace. Okay, so we have this S5 mod Z2 with a singular locus, and it's just there that these twisted fields will live in this case. Okay, and so in this case, there is only one collapsed two-cycle, and if you look at the fluxes of an SNS and RR2 forms through this two-cycle, the action can be written down explicitly. And once again, just like in the other case, it's very important to include the Chern-Simons term, F5 mod NSNS field mod DRR field. If you recall, in the conifold case, this was precisely the term that created the mixing between NSNS and RR fields, which was responsible for the flow. So writing this six-dimensional action in this way, we look for solutions which are created by a fractional brain. Now, a fractional brain parallel to these original brains clearly will only have fields varying in r and phi directions. So there is this angle phi and the ADS5 or ADSR that we need to keep in the game. And here the miracle happens. Okay, so the miracle is that when you write this action with the Wessemina term, it combines into something that is very simple in terms of a complex coordinate, re to the I phi. Okay, so on this space orthogonal to the R3-1, we introduce the complex coordinate, and the complex field gamma made out of beta RR and beta NSNS enters also. So in the complex notation, you just have the gamma dz bar times its complex conjugate. Okay, and what this means is that the equation of motion has the solutions which are just holomorphic functions of z bar. So just as in Seiberg-Witten theory, we basically arrive at holomorphic functions in this n equal 2 case. And basically we know that all the correct solutions will have this holomorphicity property. So now if we just put a fractional three brain at some given z-coordinate, we know one fact about it, that because this fractional brain lives in six dimensions, as we go around it, this Ramon-Ramon scalar will just acquire non-trivial monodromy. It will shift by one. it's a magnetic source for the scalar, and this means that this together with holomorphicity fixes the solution to be log of z minus z star, and you can very clearly see that for z, basically, so this is a domain wall again. So to the left of this domain wall, you have no monodromy, and to the right, you have precise. So if you go to the left and circle around the fixed circle, you find absolutely no shift by one, and to the right of it, you find shift by one. So this is a much more explicit solution for the fractional brain than we could obtain in the n equal one case. And further, you can, so this actually incorporates the one loop n equal two beta function for SUN plus one cross SUN theory. And again, the thing that flows is the difference between these complex coupling parameters of the two gauge groups. Okay, furthermore, if you study how their sum flows, you know from field theory considerations that it should not flow. Okay, so the sum stays constant. And we were able, by analyzing the source for the dilaton, the holomorphicity of gamma actually ensures that there is no source term for phi at all. So it seems actually even simpler than the n equal one example. And as a further problem, it would be interesting to analyze in this approach how the instanton effects come in, and we expect them to come from fractional PQD instantons in this geometry. You can tell that as you get very, very close to this infrared singularity at Z star, the production of these D instantons will be enhanced. So you expect them to basically remove this singularity. So finally, a remark is that the solution is certainly reliable by the same arguments as before for M over N being small. But what if M over N is of order 1? Does it break down? And as of this moment, I don't think it does. In fact, it seems to me that there is an exact solution where ADS5, so the bulk fields don't change at all. And one symptom of this is that the dilaton does not receive any source. And I think, I haven't checked, but I think that the graviton will also not be deformed. So the only, so you basically might have an exact solution where you have ADS5 cross S5 mod gamma background with just some additional holomorphic fields turned on the six-dimensional subspace ADS5 cross S1. Yes? They're no longer zero. I mean, here it's just these complex scalars. They're the descendants. So after you dimensional reduce on these two cycles, okay, what you're left with are these complex scalars. They are not zero, but they're holomorphic. And because of that, some things that you think might spoil the ADS-ness of this solution don't actually spoil it. In particular, the source for the dilaton cancels out by holomorphicity. Well, for the dilaton, you see clearly that there is a minus sign. I have not checked the graviton, so I won't bet on it. But it's an interesting thing to check. Okay. Yes. Well, if you, yeah, presumably as you flow to the infrared, you know, you will hit the place where, right. Well, that should be visible from the solution. Yeah, when M over N is very small, is of order 1 over N, you can basically use the solution essentially throughout the space and not encounter this effect, because essentially you flow very slowly compared to the value of the couplings. Yeah, eventually you can get to that stage. Okay, so I think this theory, so this theory is clearly quite interesting. and deserves further study. I just want to mention that, of course, it has been studied before in the T-dual formulation by Ed Witten in terms of an S5 brains with D4 brains suspended between them. And there the beta function was understood through bending of the NS brains. But here we're doing something different. We're really using the supergravity equations of motion. And in particular, the presence of this Chern-Simons term seems to be crucial for seeing the right kind of flow. So just to summarize, the search for gravity duals of field theory beta function seems to be the next necessary step after the ADS-CFT. In fact, I remember sometime in March 98, I was talking to Ami, and I said that what would be even better than the ADS-CFT correspondence would be a non-ADS, non-CFT correspondence. So I hope that this is a small step in this direction. I must say that this, for a long time, appeared very difficult to me because the logarithmic flow typically can be seen for small g squared n, which is precisely where the gravity approximation is unreliable. But if we consider instead a theory with two gauge groups, then basically the Toft couplings for both of them can be kept very large, and that's sort of what blows up your space into a smooth ADS space. And then we may look at the flow of this difference parameter. And this turns out to be much easier, especially in cases with supersymmetry, where the beta functions are known from supersymmetry considerations. And of course, the Chern-Simons terms are crucial for giving the correct equations of motion that produces logarithmic flow. And just as a final word, it would be great to extend these results to non-supersymmetric settings, such as those that we could find in the type zero theory. So thank you very much. Thank you.
And I'm going to call today to the editor, if I have time today, maybe not because I'm busy, but the next few days I'm going to call to the editor of Wolves and see what they can do for us.
Okay,
if they agree to make it not in their usual course.
Also contact?
Yeah, I think. Okay. Yeah, I know. You want to be first.
I want to be first.
That's fine. That's fine.
You tell the ladies out there that they say they will write a decision.
Okay. I'll
tell them.
Yeah, just tell them, but the most important, tell them to Mr. Reed, who is the chairman.
Right, so Steve Giddings is looking for him.
I was looking for him too, I couldn't find him, but okay.
Okay.
If I see him first, I tell him.
Okay, otherwise I'll tell him.
Okay, good.
Thank you. that one I can.